Every year, several hundred intrepid hikers walk all the way from Mexico to Canada along the Pacific Crest Trail. At more than 2,600 miles long, it covers some of the most challenging and spectacular terrain in North America. But it's not just about the pretty scenery. In his book, Journeys North, The Pacific Crest Trail, author Barney Scout Mann writes about the tight-knit community he and his wife Sandy found when they hiked the PCT. He joins us now from his home in San Diego, California. Welcome to Living on Earth, Scout.
It's a pleasure to be here.
So what drew you and your wife, Sandy, to hike the trail back in 2007?
So you have to go ways back. Both of us fell in love with backpacking at about the same age. I was 13 years old, and I was born into a household with parents who don't camp. But they took me, age 11, 12, 13, to Boy Scout meetings. And there at age 13, I went on a 50-mile backpack in the Sierra Nevada, John Muir's Range of Light. I was always been the smallest boy in any class at school, which is hard on a boy. It's no fun. I had to dance as fast as I could to make sure I wasn't the kid picked on, and it didn't always work. But out there, I saw stuff that I'd only seen on a TV screen. I grew up in Los Angeles. And so bears were not behind bars. I actually could see one. And hearing a beaver tail slap in a stream and seeing it, this was the real deal. And the other thing was, out there, as long as I walked, and all right, I did have a 35-pound pack on a not 80-pound body, and that was hard. It was. But out there, as long as I kept up, I was the same as the big boys. So at age 13, I fell in love with backpacking. And for Sandy, the same. My wife, Sandy, who has the trail name Frodo, and actually Scout is not my given name, but to thousands of people, they only know us as Scout and her trail name, Frodo. She too, she'd see her brothers go off to on Boy Scout campouts. She'd think, I can hike. I want to do that. And it wasn't until later as a teen, she got her chance. And as she said, when we met a few years later, if I hadn't been a backpacker, she wouldn't have married me. In 2003, we'd already begun thinking seriously about doing a through hike, as they call it, doing the entire Pacific Crest Trail. And we went out on the John Muir Trail, which is only, and we use the word only very strangely in this community, only 211 miles. We wanted to see if we'd come off that still being as enthused about doing a through hike. And obviously we did, because in 2007, the summer of our 30th wedding anniversary, we set out to hike the Pacific Crest Trail.
Wonderful. Well, let's get a lay of the land here. You start your trip from San Diego, you make your way down to the Mexico border, and then walk all the way up to Canada. How does the landscape change as the PCT makes its way from each border?
Well, there's both a micro and a macro answer. The macro is it changes dramatically. You have some landscape that is out of Lawrence of Arabia, sand dunes. It's one day in the Mojave, and you have some of it. And you have landscape that is, you are above tree line. It is barren. It is white granite that glitters in alpenglow. And you have everything in between. So one guidebook that identified 15 different plant and fauna zones. And the PCT goes through all of them. But you might think, okay, I'll be walking, and in one day I'll be in one thing, and then it'll slowly and gradually change. And it doesn't happen at all. The micro scale, literally in a half day's time, I can go through easily, and many times, go through half of those different flora and fauna zones. I cross under a dirt underpass under Interstate 10, east from Los Angeles, at about 1,800 feet. And I'm in what looks to you like desert. And within, okay, not a half day, but two-thirds of a day, I have climbed up into a pine forest and I've gone through all the zones in between, the different desert zones, Oaken. And the other thing, it's not just the landscape changing. Because we're out for 5 months, we're walking through seasons. I see a plant, and actually in each of my three long hikes, I've done the Pacific Crest Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, and the Appalachian Trail. Each one is a plant called skunk cabbage or false hellebore. Each one of these trails, I would see it sprouting in the spring, just a little tiny tips coming up, almost like a bulb. It's only about a foot and a half tall, really thick, lush green, and then it has little flowers. And I know I'm reaching the end of my hike because at the first frost, a bit like a tomato plant, the plant just collapses, and it's like a starfish on the ground. And I know it's my hike is beginning to end when I've seen that.
Well, let's talk a bit about the culture of these long hikes, starting with the idea of trail names. That's a nickname that's given to you by your fellow hikers. How did you get yours, and how did Sandy come to be known as Frodo?
So imagine if you got dropped down into a completely different place. If you woke up one morning and you were in Hogwarts, or you woke up and you were in Narnia, would you still want to be Bobby?
That sounds a little boring.
This is actually a tradition that started on the Appalachian Trail. You do something stupid, maybe it's a play on your name, but trail names are usually given, sometimes thrust on you, rather than something you choose, although that happens on occasion. A guy who was named Sky God as his trail name didn't take too long to realize that he had chosen that name for himself. Yeah. The name Scout dates back to our 2003 John Muir Trail hike. First day out, a young man attached himself to us like glue. 12 miles later, we're climbing up a Half Dome, and he was just out of high school. The two of us must have looked like parental types. And I hear this question behind me, and the question is, what's the most important thing you've done in your life? And at that point, I probably had 3, 4, 5 truthful answers to that. But the one that came out of my mouth was, I was scoutmaster of a large Boy Scout troop for 5 years. And scoutmaster is a bit pretentious. And the book that we torn up, and yes, we used to tear up books and put 150 pages at a time in our resupply up the trail. So we wouldn't have to carry the whole book at that time. The book we'd done that to and that we were reading was To Kill a Mockingbird. And who would not want to be named after 9-year-old Scout Finch? Frodo, I hope we have some LOTR, some Lord of the Rings fans out there. Frodo comes from it's my fault. About a year before we hiked in 2007, I woke up and realized, oh my gosh, that's going to be the summer of our 30th wedding anniversary. She's not a jewelry person, but I really wanted to do something special. So literally, the idea sprang into my head, whole cloth. I could see a Pacific Crest Trail ring, a custom ring. And you could look at it from 4 or 5 feet away, and you'd see the trail symbol, that pregnant triangle, as we call it, with the tree in the center and a mountain's backdrop. Mm-hmm. And in the channel would be a small outline of the northern and southern monuments and of the two primary mountains that you see on the trail, Mount Shasta and Mount Hood. I drove a jeweler crazy for about 6 months, but she actually did it. I give her the ring. We both cry. And if she was here, she said, yeah, you cried more, which is true. I did. And the next day, we'd had a number of hikers who I had shown before I gave it to her. And all but as a group, they accosted her. We want to see, you know, show us the ring. But they said, we know your trail name. You are the ring bearer. You're going on a long quest, a dangerous journey. You are Frodo. And to this day, 13 years later, literally thousands of people, if not tens of thousands, know her simply as Frodo.
Yeah.
And on her hand, she still wears the one ring.
Aw, lovely. And there are also people that are called trail angels. You and Frodo became known as trail angels for hosting people in your home. Can you tell us about that, please?
So you start with trail magic. And trail magic is literally any act of kindness toward a hiker, whether you pick up a hitchhiking hiker, whether you have a bit of your town lunch left over, you're going out on a day hike, and you run into a longer distance hiker, and you see them eyeing that piece of pizza you're just planning on taking home and throwing away, and you give it to them, and you've just made their day. That's trail magic, and you who have done that is a trail angel. And it goes from small to large. What we do is probably a bit large and maybe even obsessive. For about 2 months, we host hikers in our home. People from all over, about a third are internationals. And we'll have 30 to 40 hikers here a night. And we have this core of volunteers because it's all free. We had so much kindness in 2007 that came our way. You know, we're out there in these small towns. We don't have the things we usually have at disposal. And so many times and places along the way, we had a trail magic from trail angels. Be able to give back is great.
That seems like something that's so rare in your day-to-day life, both A, relying on the kindness of strangers and having that appreciation for your fellow people and feeling like you want to give back to them, the people that have been so generous with you.
That's one of the things I love about the outdoors. It's one of the reasons I wrote the book too. So people who, their comfort zone is their couch, they can have a moment to experience what it's really like to be out there. And one of the neat things, as my wife likes to say, she thought, you know, the hike was going to be so much about the landscape and stunning views, the pain and deprivation and time, you know, the physical challenge. But at the end of the day, what it was really about, gosh, I'm going to tear up a little bit. It was about the people. If you and I were coming at each other on a trail, and whether we're out there overnight, a week, or, you know, in my case, 5 months, I would look at you from afar, or a couple hundred yards away, and I say, oh, here's another person. I would think, this person would give me the shirt off their back. And I would anticipate you would have the same thought in your mind, that the default attitude is, we're kind to each other. I tell people that out there on the trail, I found the community of people I always wanted to be with and I never knew existed.
Is that what keeps you coming back to these long trail hikes that you do?
Why do I come back to it? A lot of reasons. A lot of reasons. One of which, of course, is that rich, rich sense of camaraderie. The other is, well, the best way to explain it is our hike of the Pacific Crest Trail is 13 years ago. And today, as I'm talking, I'm 69 years old. I was out there for 155 days. And Bobby, today, right now, I could sit here and tell you a story for each and every one of those 155 days. We are open out there in an entirely different way. We imprint differently. And around any bend, at any moment, a small miracle can happen.
So you have this great story in your book about a big bear that you encountered on the trail one day. Can you tell us that story, please?
Yeah, I love it. Although it doesn't necessarily put me in the best light.
Well.
So we are 1,000 miles up the trail. We are actually just west of Lake Tahoe. And people we've leapfrogged with, that's you'll see for a couple days and you won't see for a week, or you might have a break with and then see them the next day. They've all seen a bear. Now that they have their pictures and they have their bear stories, and we have not seen a bear yet. What's wrong with us? And it's not that we haven't done many other earlier trips, but we don't have our Pacific Crest Trail bear story yet. And we've gone to the country where it's most likely, in the Sierra Nevada. So my wife and I are camping alone, which we did just over the majority of the time. And we were cowboy camping, which means not a tent. It was nice enough, and we enjoy that, to camp in the stars. We would trade off every night. One of us would do dinner, and the other of us would set up our little campsite. So that's what I'm doing. I'm laying out our sleeping bags. My wife is about 20 feet away. And the other side of her, about 50 feet away, I see pull around this large rock, the largest black bear I have seen in the wild. Beautiful specimen. Height of summer, sleek coat, actually cinnamon-colored, as black bears can be. And as I like to say, this thing was the size of a small Volkswagen. And I can tell, as I see him, I can tell by his aspect where he's looking, he is not aware of us yet. The wind direction is such, and he's looking away. So what's my first move? There's me. Between me and the bear is my wife, right? My first move is a quick hand down, camera up, and I get off 2 shots. But all the while I'm watching him. And then I get her attention to go, just make a little noise. She looks at me and I flick up my head and she looks, sees the bear. And she takes the pot of food, puts it in our bear canister, cranks down the lid, comes over, stands by me. And she says, what do we do? She knows. What you want to do is look large and show them you're human. And I guess a lot of people think banging on pots means that we're human, because that's what people can do. Or clicking your hiking poles together. But what we did was we sang in 2-part harmony Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah to the bear. And as we reached the chorus, he turns his massive head and looks at us long enough for us to know and acknowledge whose house we are truly in. And then he turns and slowly ambles away.
So after walking some 2,600 miles, you're just a few dozen miles from the border with Canada, from completing this entire hike that you've been doing, when a series of powerful snowstorms dumped just several feet of snow on the Cascade Range in Washington, where you were hiking, What was it like to face that final test when you were so close from finishing?
We thought we had this in the bag.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, this is now late September. At that point, you feel like you're in a vice. The days are growing shorter. So I have less time to walk. I see it all around me. I see it in the colors. I see the huckleberries are now gone and they're bright red. I feel it in the weather. And I feel it miserably at times in the weather. And you feel it in your body. I've been charging for now close to 5 months. And I'm getting messages from lots of different parts. And it's not just me. It's the young ones, too. We're being told we feel it.
Yeah.
It's time to shut down. And we know you can also feel we have Canada in the bag. It's almost every year safe to finish by October 15th. I've seen people even finish on October 31st because the snows at some point shut down the trail. September 29th, we are 60 miles from the Canadian border. We need 3 days and two nights. Unbeknownst to us, as you just said, a series of storms have lined up out of the Gulf of Alaska, and that night the first one hits. I remember waking up and seeing the first snowfall. Oh, this is sort of, you know, this is sort of cool. And then as it starts to weigh down on the tent and you have to knock it off, and then as we're waking up to 3-4 inches already in the ground, and what's this going to be like? How much more is it going to go? And that day, we fairly quickly have a high pass. We're climbing first thing 2,000 feet. We have a young woman, Blazer, one of the main other folks in the book, Journeys North. We were close enough that she would call us her trail parents, her trail mom and trail dad, and we'd call her a trail daughter.
Mm.
And Blazer, her jacket zipper's broken and she's lost a glove. I have taught snowshoe backpacking. I'm experienced in snow backpacking. And as we get toward the crest of Cutthroat Pass, what a name, huh? Snow's been getting worse and worse. It's now over our ankles, and trail finding is an issue. This is days before anyone routinely carried a GPS or you had one on your phone.
Mm.
We have paper maps. And we see four people we know. Guts, Chuckwagon, Dalton, and Chigger. Do you love those trail names?
I do. Chuckwagon, that's great.
Yeah. Three guys and a gal. Chigger was a gal. They're heading toward us. Why are they heading toward us? This is wrong. And they say, we have just turned around. The trail has become impossible to find. We're heading back to a roadhead. In fact, the last paved road, 5 miles back down at the base. And we're going to hitch into the little tiny town, Winthrop, and see what the story is.
Mm.
We stand there in snow that's almost white out, and it's getting deeper by the moment. And for 10 minutes, I talk, weighing it over. And reluctantly, I said, okay, maybe that is the best thing. And I turn. And I take one step south, I who have been heading north for 5 months, and I stop in my tracks. I can't go south. And I open my mouth, and I start to talk again. In the meantime, Blazer said, I'm doing whatever Scout and Frodo are doing. And we felt like the rest of the group would do the same. My wife and I had a tacit agreement. She did something that, as I'm talking there in the snow, it's the only time that she's ever done their marriage. We're now married 43 years. After about 2 minutes of me jawing again, she says, Scout, I'm exercising my veto. We're going back.
Mm.
And I stopped talking. And we started heading down.
Yeah.
And that was the first time we retreated from the snow.
But you did finish eventually. You made it to Canada.
Yes, I'm still here. And we did make it to Canada that year. Yeah.
Yeah, I imagine it, you make it sound like, the geese that are flying south for the winter. They can't turn around and go north. That's just against what's ingrained in you at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, there was this intense drive. Every night I'd go out and I'd brush my teeth. And on the Pacific Crest Trail, most nights were clear. And I'd look up in the sky and I'd spot the Big Dipper. And then I'd go from those two sides of the pot and I'd go six lengths out and I'd eyeball the North Star. And I'd just think for a moment. That's the way I'm heading. That's what I'm doing.
Scout Mann's new book is Journeys North, The Pacific Crest Trail. Scout, thank you so much for sharing all these stories with us.
It was a real pleasure, Bobby.